The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Big news. Seth Partnow is joining Dunked On Prime. If you want to subscribe to get all of Seth's content, you can do so at dunkedon.supportingcast.fm. We've got a great episode coming up for you with Nate and John Hollinger. Their normal, excellent, in-depth discussion, the type of stuff that you can get at Dunked On Prime. There's some free episodes like this, but you want every episode, you got to subscribe. And now that package will be even more content for you with Seth Partnow. If you stick around till the end of this discussion with Nate and John, there's another discussion with Nate and Seth talking about what Seth is going to do, and of course, some basketball talk. So hope you enjoy all of that. We hope you subscribe. That's dunkedon.supportingcast.fm.
We have huge news for those of you listening on the free pod. Another reason to subscribe to Dunked On Prime, including getting every Hollinger and Duncan episode. Seth Partnow, former director of analytics for the Milwaukee Bucks, is joining Dunked On Prime. He's going to be providing exclusive statistical support for Danny's and my podcasts, and also writing for us in the newsletter, which is part of Dunked On Prime, twice a week. And I'm sure he'll make the occasional podcasting appearance as well. But really excited to add Seth in. It's just another way that we're giving you something that you can't get anywhere else here at Dunked On Prime. Seth is going to join us at the end of this episode to talk about what he's going to be doing and hopefully whet your appetite and get you to sign up at the link in the show notes. We're doing a special sale for a yearly membership as well, or just try it out for a month and see whether you like it. We hope you'll give it a shot. All right, John, it is that time of year again, the time of year when we need some content and therefore decide to do organization rankings. There's really nothing special about it. I was thinking about it as I went back and looked at last year's rankings of how much has changed since then for a lot of these organizations. And
yeah,
I was like, why do we do it at the time? Like, oh, right, because it's November and this is just a good time to do this because there's the trade deadline and there's all this other stuff. So this is the time, if we're going to do this, that it needs to fit in.
Exactly.
So, but it is, I mean, there's nothing special about this time. I mean, I think the only key is just to not overreact too much to what's happened the first 15 games of the year.
Yeah, it's actually a good time to do this because the wheel on the transactions has basically stopped spinning for a while. So we can, you know, you don't have that fog of war that you have in, say, early July, where there's stuff that's so fresh and you're still trying to evaluate what happened.
Yeah, this is a great time to do this. Good point. It was totally intentional that we decided to choose this time.
Plus, we're still miles away from the trade deadline, and most of these teams don't really have enough sample size for us to, you know, completely pass judgment on where they are. And the entire Western Conference is 10-6.
All right, John, how are we doing this? How are we ranking these organizations?
So this is top to bottom. We're doing this. So it's not just front office and it's not just transactions, right? It's ownership. It's coaching. It's player development.
No, it's not coaching.
It's not coaching. Like I said, it is ownership.
Because that's what our coach rankings are for.
Okay. It is ownership, front office.
Basically just like medical staff.
Yeah, so you get into that, and that so coaching. That's, I mean, like, there are elements where it sort of bleeds into the coaching staff maybe a little bit, but...
Right. Yeah, I think, but, you know, for example, the Suns are the typical example of this, right? Like, Monty Williams, pretty high in our coach ranking. Suns, I won't spoil it, not going to be in my top tier, shall we say, of organization. I like, the way I like to think about it is... If I were a fan of a random team, which organization from the owner on down would I want running my team? So it's not only, hey, what organization would I want running the LA Clippers, who have gobs and gobs of money and can work within that environment. If these people were in a different environment, like in, say, Utah or something like that, or a smaller market or San Antonio, would they be able to still do well under those circumstances also? So you're trying to divorce the organization from their circumstances as much as you can, although obviously part of that is just ownership willingness to pay. And so that goes into it as well. But if you're going from below the owner, that's what you're ranking on. The owner, the biggest thing is don't meddle and be willing to spend money are kind of the two biggest things that you can
share. Sure.
Anything else that we can kind of talk about here that we're going to use to evaluate as the track records of these teams?
I think you want to look at the process and the intent as much as the result on some of these, and not maybe over reward. I don't know if lucking into is the right word, but you could, I mean, especially, I guess, having worked in the league, you can kind of tell when a team overpaid or wasn't really, really being sharp about a situation. And a lot of times it's weird on the team side. You notice that more with low level deals than you do with the big stuff that makes the front page news. You know, when you see a bit player go for 2 second round picks and everyone just shrugs their shoulders and you're in the league and you're like, what the hell are those people doing? You get little examples of tidbits like that, or just in how they manage their cap and how they use some of their exceptions, some of their leftover room, if they have any, how they manage around the tax. A lot of times, like, those aren't necessarily the most consequential moves, but they are tells into how well run the rest of the operation is.
A big one that I'll be focusing on, perhaps even more than usual, is just overall organizational vision. Creating a plan, sticking to a plan, making the hard decisions, right? So we've seen a number of teams, San Antonio trading guys away, Utah trading guys away. That's going to be short-term pain there. Oklahoma City did that a couple of years ago. Then there are some other teams where, okay, what is your overall plan here exactly in terms of just the success cycle, self-evaluation? How good can this team be? What is your goal as an organization? Are we just trying to make the playoffs? Are we trying to be profitable? Are we trying to just not get criticized too much? Or are you really trying to build a consistent winner, a consistent 50-win team, a team that can compete for championships, even win championships? That's a big part of this to me as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, all right, so I think some of these teams that are just kind of hoping to get the 8 seed every year, and that's like the extent of their vision, I think they're going to end up ranking very low in this.
Let's say. And then there's also a little bit more micro of just how are the pieces that you are acquiring fitting together? How does that fit into an overall vision for a team, how we want to play? But also hiring a coach is another important aspect of this. Hiring a staff, that's huge. Trades, of course, we'll go into it. If they've just made some bad trades that didn't make any sense, this is a big one though, John. And again, this bleeds into coaching a little bit, but you've had a ton of experience with this. Player development, that's massive.
Yeah, and some of it comes down to organizational priorities in terms of, you know, do they make it easy for the team to succeed? Have they invested in a G League team, which a couple teams still haven't? Have they put the resources in place to allow the coaching staff to develop these players?
Yeah, and then you've got, of course, the draft record as well. It's not just, oh, we took, hey, you got a pretty good guy with the number one pick. It's, did you identify players maybe that weren't as high on other people's radar screen? Did you make a trade to go get someone who turned out to be good? Did you make a trade to go get someone that turned out to be bad? That's a question mark. And then, of course, we said it before, but the willingness to spend both on the overall organization, but perhaps even more so into the tax when you have a good team. I had a lot of trouble this year, John. Overall, I think as I looked at last year compared to this year, some organizations that we thought were good have had some real missteps. Some that we thought were bad have made some big moves. Some of those moves have looked good. Some of them haven't looked good. So I think we're going to see a lot of change this year. I don't know about you.
I was surprised when I made my list. It was hard at both the top and the bottom. I felt like some of the worst teams got better and some of the best teams got worse, comparing to the, you know, how we ranked them a year ago. And then there's a big like Western Conference vibe where like there's a lot of kind of pleasantly above average rating teams here that were hard for me to separate. So we'll see if you agree with me on some of these.
Yeah, and I would say even there's some movement at the bottom as well. We've seen new ownership in some of these teams at the bottom. We've seen some big changes in some of these teams at the bottom. So that's something to keep in mind also. And just generally, it doesn't look like there are many dominant teams this year. That kind of goes into this a little bit. You don't want to overreact, as noted, to what's happened so far this season, but we could try to project going forward. That's kind of what we thought it would be before the season as well. Other than Boston, nobody is really distinguishing themselves a ton so far this year. And so if everything is kind of jumbled together, it's hard to identify those at the very top, but we must come up with one of them here. So John, tier one, we try to put these in tiers. Obviously this is largely subjective. So
yes,
your number one could be my number four or whatever, but we try to delineate them at least some with tiers. So give me your number one tier one organization.
Yeah, so I kind of had a tier 1A and a tier 1B. And at the top of tier 1A, I went with the Toronto Raptors. I just feel like they have the best track record of just being consistently solid, making one good decision after another, consistently having really good teams, pushed their chips in on Kawhi when the moment was right, had the balls to jump in and hire Nick Nurse when that moment was right, had been willing to spend money, pay the tax. They invest a ton of money in player development and analytics. I think they're, you know, clearly one of the most respected organizations in the league. So there were three or four teams that I think you could have gone with here. I went with Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto was in my top group as well. And I don't really have a huge argument of why it hasn't been Toronto, simply maybe that the last 3 years, they've got a tanking season, which actually was probably a feather in their cap to decide to do that. And then they got Scotty Barnes, and they've got
Barnes pick was brilliant because the consensus was that they should take Suggs, right?
Yes, it was. And you know, we won't note that Jalen Suggs actually has a higher true shooting percentage than Scotty Barnes right now. But, but yes, I would prefer to have Scotty Barnes. So yeah, Toronto's got to be right up there for me. It doesn't seem like they're necessarily on the path to having the absolute highest level of team, but they always find guys on the margins. Their development, you mentioned just OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet. I mean, these are high level starters, all stars that they got with the 23rd pick, the 28th pick, and totally undrafted. And and they still seem like they're able to develop new players of that ilk as well. They come in and get guys like a Chris Boucher, who is essentially
undrafted,
not someone that anyone was interested in. Like I think they got him on a two-way after the Warriors cut him, and he just coming off a torn ACL. So they made the Powell trade to get Trent, which I think has worked out well. So they're definitely right up there. I went with Miami as my number one still. I mean, they again made the East Finals a year ago. They don't do things necessarily traditionally, but they always develop players. When you look at what they got out of Max Strus, Gabe Vincent last year, that's been pretty incredible. Developing two number 14 picks, Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero, into high level of players. They're able to make good moves in free agency as well. Like, they're not a perfect organization and they're not for everyone, but they're able to find the players that work for them and develop them into really, really good players. So I had them at number one, but I can't tell you why they're better or worse than Toronto. Maybe just the recent success
to
the conference finals.
So I had Miami at number three. Part of the reason, I mean, I think when we do our coach rankings, Eric Spoelstra will definitely rank really, really highly. So I had to kind of carve that part out a little bit.
But they also, you know, I mean, this is the same organization that promoted him back in 2008, stuck with him during the Big Three era when he was under a lot of fire, stuck with him through a couple of losing seasons, and now he's an incredibly long tenured coach. He's the second longest tenured head coach behind Pop. Is that right?
I believe that's correct.
And probably, like, that's a guy that they developed. You know, he was not someone that everyone was like, oh, this guy.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing you get into with Miami and with Toronto is that there's a real track record here now. Like, we're looking at
a decade,
multiple decades in Miami's case of doing this right and doing it successfully. And I think the Heat have gotten better at some things that got them in trouble in the past.
Sure.
Especially from the player maintenance side, even though they talk a good game about toughing out through injuries and stuff. I think they've been a lot smarter about not running guys into the ground, which was their previous reputation. So give them points for that. It is interesting how they're set up now. I mean, they've kind of gone way in on some of these contracts. When you look at the Hero deal, the Duncan Robinson deal, things get really interesting next year, especially. So it's going to get interesting, I think, how they deal with that.
You know what?
Butler's money keeps increasing.
Yeah, I think I should put Toronto above them because Toronto doesn't give out bad contracts and Miami does sometimes.
The one thing Toronto does, they give out player options like the Halloween candy, but they don't.
Yeah,
they don't go over on the number though.
Right, and I think maybe that's a good idea. You know, maybe you say, hey, if we're stuck between having to do a player option or paying a guy way too much on too risky of a contract, you know, maybe we're better off doing the player option. We just trust that we're going to work it out with them. We'll see. You know, it's just OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr. We'll see whether that comes under roost. That's a new tactic they've done in the last few years. But they've also, I mean, I can't remember the last time they gave out a bad contract. Like, it hasn't been in the last 5 years. You know, even
Damari Carroll would be the one, but that was several years ago now.
Yeah, that was 2015. So, and he had moments where he was okay for them. His health fell apart in the end, which maybe could have been anticipated.
Oh, it is that time again, wedding season. Indochino's custom suits will have you walking into a wedding looking like $1 million, feeling like $1 million, because their suits are custom made to fit you perfectly. You can get a tailored fit from the comfort of your home. You can set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website, choose customizations without even leaving the house. Indochino was the official outfitter of my wedding. I got a tux from them. All my groomsmen got custom fitted sport jackets, and I'd like to think we all look great. Order your custom suit now. Be ready for wedding season, whether it's at home or in person at a showroom New Year, which I actually recommend. That's what I did. An Indochino style guide can walk you through all of the amazing customizations that they have. The lapels, the lining, single-breasted, double-breasted. You can feel the fabrics in person. That's definitely the best way to do it, in my opinion. But you can also do it from home as well. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use the code PER. Easy to remember PER because that's the metric that John invented. Use the code PER to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O, Indochino.com. And don't forget that PER code to let them know you came from us. As a sports fan, you know that when you get into the last seconds of the game, you've got an amazing chance to win, to make all your hard work pay off. All you have to do is convert at the very end, and your favorite player misses the last shot, swings and misses at that high fastball just out of the zone. So if it's that bad in sports, imagine how bad it is if your business's commerce platform keeps whiffing on golden opportunities. You're putting in all this work only to have it squandered because you can't actually convert, because your commerce platform is not keeping up. Instead, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. They are revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. If you're a garage entrepreneur, IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. If you're selling signed sneakers from Shopify's in-person POS system or offering official outfielders outfits on Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify is the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. It's no wonder that Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is possibly powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/PR, all lowercase, easy to remember because John invented it. That's shopify.com/PR to take your business to the next level today. Shopify.com/PR, all lowercase. Don't forget that /PR URL to let them know you came from us.
Who else you got in this group here? So you convinced me. I'm moving Toronto up above Miami.
Can I just take a moment here? So last week we did a show on our worst predictions, right? Our mulligans. I think we need to carry over one thing I said last year from our mulligans episode into this one.
Okay.
Didn't I have Brooklyn number one last year when we did this?
I don't know if you had them number one. I think you might have had them in your top group.
I'm pretty sure I had them number one. Anyway.
Yeah. Let me see what I had them. I had Brooklyn last year. Now, why would I close that sheet? That was dumb. I had them in my second tier.
Okay.
Right at the top of my second tier. Yeah, okay. I had Toronto and Miami in my top tier. And
okay. So I think I definitely I had
four in my top tier this year.
Okay. I think I definitely had Brooklyn in my top tier. And all I can say to that is, woof. Wow. That's not going to be in my
top. I mean, well, let's remember where we were last year. We thought they had handled the Kyrie thing well.
Yep.
By sending him away with the vaccine. Then they brought him back. And then, mm-hmm. We still thought, like, if the vaccine thing got worked out, that they were potentially a championship favorite. And then just the massive amount of embarrassment that's happened since then. And, certainly you have to lower them quite a bit as a result of that. We'll see how precipitous the fall really is.
Yes.
Because they did obviously some great things before that.
Yes.
But that may be it. We'll see. That could be even in episode 2 of our organization rankings.
Exactly.
Where we really discuss that. We'll see.
Are they an episode 1 team or an episode 2 team? Let's see.
Well, last year, I think we had actually 3 episodes. So that.
Oh, okay. There's another wrinkle.
Well, we just got to see how long this takes us. Okay. Give me another tier 1 team right now, though.
The team I had at number 2 was the Los Angeles Clippers. I think they are really well coached. I think they are really shrewd about how they trade and how they build out the rest of their roster. Obviously, willingness to spend from ownership and the commitment from ownership is a big part, but also doing a pretty good job on player development. If you look at some of these guys, Amir Coffey, Brandon Boston, that they brought along. So just a well-run organization from top to bottom. And I don't know, I don't see a lot of holes here. You can argue they were a little too overzealous with a couple of the contracts they gave out, but again, with the freedom they have to spend, they didn't really need to hold back, right? So I just think that, we'll see what happens with it. Comes down to Paul George and Kawhi being healthy, and we just don't know how that's going to play out for them. The biggest criticism you could probably say is they never got that third guy. But I just think they're really well run from top to bottom.
Yeah, certainly coming into the season, you felt like this was a team that didn't really have many, if any, holes. And when you can write a blank check every time, that's easier. But you still have to use the system like they did in that Portland trade to fill those holes with good players. I think they have a style and a way that they want to play. And certainly the Ty Lue isn't part of these rankings, but hiring him is making the tough decision to move on from Doc Rivers to get Ty Lue. That clearly to me was an upgrade. Maybe some people wouldn't have thought that at the time. And they're willing to spend on basically every aspect of the organization, and they've proven again this is the one team that literally will fucking pay anything, it seems like, right? Like even Golden State, like they're willing to pay a lot, but they're not willing to pay more than they have to or should be. And same thing with Brooklyn, unless it's not stretching Javon Carter. So
was that the most ridiculous thing? Like, I don't know, like nobody who's actually into the stuff on the court cares, but like that was a really expensive turd of a decision, right?
Well, particularly when Kyrie will probably just be gone. They're going to have a whole new team next year.
Yeah, so they'll be under the tax line next year when they could have had 1.3 of Carter's salary in there. Anyway.
So the Clippers are really the only one where it's like, hey, will this improve our team? Yes. Okay, we'll fucking pay it. There's still a component. Like, for example, Brooklyn not bringing back Bruce Brown was another one that shows up there. Golden State not bringing back Gary Payton and maybe Otto Porter to a certain extent, although they didn't really have the means to pay Porter. But so those are all things that I think make the Clippers up at the top. The one thing that gives me some pause is just maybe there, and the dangers of this have been laid bare on the opposite coast with Brooklyn, of are they just giving Kawhi too long of a leash to just do whatever the fuck he wants?
Yeah. I would say that is starting to rear its head a little more. I mean, he definitely does his own thing as far as all the medical stuff. And, I mean, he's a great player. You hopefully will get the best out of him when it matters and be able to live with this nuisance in the meantime. But it definitely feels like it detracts from them, and you wonder a little bit what impact it has in the locker room too when he's just kind of off on his own island.
Yeah, it seemed like that might have been an issue in the 1920 season to some
totally.
Degree.
Yeah.
But it seems like they at least push back on him a little bit with this, I'm going to start games 6 minutes into the second quarter thing, because that just screwed up the rotation so much, and they're doing that a little bit differently now. So it doesn't seem to have manifested anywhere near to the level that it has in Brooklyn. Yeah, so yeah. I had the Clippers in there as well. I had them at number four, though, and making a big jump this season, the Boston Celtics.
Okay, I had Boston as the top team in Tier 1B. I had them fourth.
Yeah, for me, Boston, the hiring of Ime Udoka worked really well. Quite frankly, I think they handled the suspension and probable firing of Ime Udoka about as well as possibly could have been handled.
I agree with that.
Also, it, compared to how some of these other situations have been handled at times around the league, they have developed guys pretty darn well. They have a good infrastructure in place in the front office. Brad Stevens was my executive of the year last year. Everything he's been touching basically has turned to gold. He's even turned Luke Kornet into a good player with the Midas touch. And so Sam Hauser is another guy. So they've had guys out and they've actually had pretty good depth. They've drafted pretty well the last few years. Part of that was Danny Ainge. He's Those gone are, now, yeah. but they've definitely have a way that they want to play. They had enough kind of organizational depth to just go with Joe Mazzulla, and he's doing a nice job so far, it seems like. And so, yeah, I think there's really very little to nitpick here for the Celtics. Did you find anything?
Ownership's willing to spend has not been on the level of, say, Toronto or the Clippers in the past. Now, they're well into the tax this year, so we'll see where they end up at year end.
But I don't see them going much above, like, $15 million over, right? So, like, they're willing to spend, but they're not willing to go into that, like, pretty crazy level.
Yeah, they're not willing to go to Crazy Town, right? And
although maybe are they in Crazy Town this year?
They're getting close to Crazy Town right now. They're like $25 million over.
Okay. Well, I take that back then. Yeah, I'd forgotten that
they actually filled their 15th roster spot with Justin Jackson. Even despite the tax hit. So definitely more of a willingness to spend this year than we've seen from them in some previous years, which is a good sign.
Right, like bringing the Brogdon trade, they took on money there. They gave out the mini mid-level to Gallo, and he's not going to play for them this year, but that still was a commitment to spend. That was, they're paying $20 million in tax or whatever for him. So, yeah, I think you can probably actually, they've spent every possible avenue that they could have spent this season, I would say, now that they actually made it to the finals. I think in previous years, they weren't quite as aggressive.
Yes. And I mean, they're still in position to do stuff, actually. I mean, they can still do a trade with Pritchard. They could still trade a future first this year. You suspect maybe at some point they will, in order to get one more rotation caliber player. Now, definitely part of how they look good is because Danny Ainge just completely boned Brooklyn in that trade with Pierce and Garnett and got Tatum and Brown out of it. At the same time, I mean, they've made enough good moves in the 2 years that Stevens has been there that I think you have to give him credit for just being still a really well-run team. And then there's, other than Stevens, I mean, there's a lot of continuity within that organization.
Absolutely.
If you go down the org chart. So, like, Ainge is gone, but usually when there's a GM change like that, a bunch of other people move in and out too. And that didn't really happen in Boston. Like, it's pretty much the same people.
Yeah, if anything, you'd have to say that Stevens has been an improvement on Danny Ainge. If you look at some of these moves, the Horford for Kemba trade was fantastic, particularly given what's happened to Kemba since then, that he's now out of the league a year after that. The Rob Williams extension was brilliant in the end. The trade for Derek White was pretty good. Even the Tice trade, which it seemed like crazy to make that deal at the time because he seemed so overpaid. He was playing so poorly in Houston. They actually ended up needing him. Like, he was a player who contributed for them at backup center in the playoffs. And then they were able to move him as part of the Brogdon trade. No muss, no fuss there, even though he wasn't on a great contract. And the Brogdon's looking good for them as well. So really, it's hard to come up with any personnel foibles. Maybe a more established backup center would have been nice this year. But I think Kornet's been good enough for a third center. You know, I don't think I would have signed Blake Griffin. Maybe they could should have signed someone else instead. But
yeah,
you know, they found Hauser out of the ether.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, Brogdon and Hauser. I mean, can you imagine the level of discussions in that locker room, the intellect and the scholarship that is happening when you have two UVA guys in one locker room?
All right. Who else is in your tier 1B?
You didn't want to elaborate on this point?
All you got to do is start doing your UVA tropes, and that's a great way to get me to move on to the next topic. So anytime you're done talking, you want to transition, just bring that up, and you can trust that I'll bring up our next topic.
And he only does that because he can't end the podcast at that point, which is the thing he really wants to do. So at number 5, shorter track record than these other organizations, but I went with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, this is your first year ranking the Grizzlies. I guess we feel like enough time has passed now. I had them in this group as well. I had them at number 9. My concern about them, we'll see on the spending. You know, there's talk that Robert Pira has really improved his fortune recently, yeah, and that he would be willing to spend big. I think they certainly have drafted well. Rare has been the draft pick in the Zach Kleiman era that hasn't at least become a rotation guy. And I think they have a good culture there. They made a great coach hire in Taylor Jenkins, who always gets these guys to overperform. They play incredibly hard. A couple of concerns that I have. Yeah, you know what? They're doing a nice job. They've got a nice team. But is there really enough of a track record? Have we seen what this team really looks like as a contender? What this front office looks like? This is a great story. You got all these young guys. You got John Morant on a rookie contract. That's all great. You won 56 games last year, lost in the second round. Now what, though? Like, are you a real team? Are you really going to be an elite organization? Are you going to act like a contender and seize this moment? Or are you going to do the OKC circa 2012 plan? Not that they're going to trade away James Harden, but we got plenty of time. These guys are young, whatever. Yeah. And then, actually made it back to the finals.
That's what held me back in rating them higher, because I mean, I thought the Melton trade was a perfect example of that, where they kind of pushed back from going in, coming off a 56 win season, and that they didn't make any other moves to push in either. Like, we still haven't seen, and this is where you get to the short track record, we still haven't seen kind of that moment of truth where they had to make some really difficult decisions.
They haven't had to make any hard decisions yet.
Yeah, exactly, about who to pay and going into the tax and whatnot, and we're just starting to get into that now. It's going to be a little interesting this coming offseason, I think, with you know, do they decide to pay Dylan Brooks and what do they do with him? Do they decide to put some of these picks they have in play and upgrade some areas? Desmond Bane should get up for a big extension. What does that do with them, you know, in future luxury tax scenarios? So the hard decisions are coming.
Yeah, they've done a lot of good things, as I mentioned. They've done everything right so far, but we're talking about from the summer of 2019 till now. They got the coach. They got the complementary pieces by drafting extremely well. Ja fell into their laps. I don't give them really much credit for drafting him, because that's who I think everyone would have taken there at number 2. Where would they be if they didn't have him as a star? Well, you know, Desmond Bane's still pretty good. And Jaren Jackson, you know, they don't get any credit for that. That was some previous regime.
Who the hell drafted him? Yeah.
Can't give him that.
Yeah.
there wasn't enough there for me. Like, I think they're certainly an up and coming organization. I believe in them a lot more than some of these other organizations, but I couldn't go quite that high. I had them at number 9.
Okay. Okay. Who did you go with at number 5?
Yeah. So that my tier 1 ended with Toronto, Miami, Boston, and the Clippers.
Okay.
This next group, I haven't fully fleshed out the order yet. The Golden State Warriors have to be in there, though, at this point in time. I mean, they just won the championship again. They put together a great team last year. They hit out every role player signing out of the park. And I think their brand is a little damaged right now because this 2 timeline thing is going poorly. Actually, you wanted to talk about that a little bit last week. Maybe this is a good time for it, of why you think that that's really just going to be so difficult for them.
Yeah, I thought it was completely unrealistic once it became apparent that James Wiseman wasn't going to be good enough to be the best player on a good team, right? Because otherwise, like your timeline is what? You still got to get your star player from someplace. And so to do that, you're either splurging in free agency or tanking or whatever. Unless he's your Kawhi Leonard, you're not going to be able to carry it forward post Steph without taking a dip down. So I thought from that sense, it wasn't unrealistic on the day Wiseman was drafted, but at some point between then and today, it became highly unrealistic, right? And, you know, say the same thing with Kuminga a little bit. Like, whatever he's going to be, I think, you know, we can take some of the highest level scenarios, start taking them off the table, right? So once that happens, I think the two timelines kind of goes out the window and you're back to one timeline.
Well, so what do you think of two timelines? Is like these guys are going to be our core of another 50 win team after Steph leaves. That's kind of your thought of what that was.
Yeah. And I think that's a great idea if you could pull it off. I mean, that's amazing. The most successful organizations in the league have been able to do that. You know, Indiana in the beginning part of this decade rebuilt an entire team around Reggie Miller. San Antonio did it, transitioning from, you know, Duncan and Robinson to, you know, Kawhi Leonard and Tony Parker. We've seen it happen, but it's rare, and it basically requires knocking a draft pick somewhere in there out of the park. And I think they were hoping Wiseman would be that guy. And he isn't.
Yeah. Instead of knocking it out of the park, it's just a really, really high pop-up. Like it hasn't come down yet, so you can't be sure where it's going to end up, but got a pretty fair idea it's going to get caught for an out at this point.
I think you're being very generous to say they made contact.
Well, no, I mean, if they hadn't made contact, maybe they get a few more pitches. You only have one chance at that number two pick. And so, yeah, I think there was, I'm not as harsh on it for a couple of reasons. Like, yeah, I think even after last year, and then particularly this summer league, you know, I wasn't a believer that any of these guys was a future superstar. But Kuminga was actually reasonably decent last year. Like, he contributed in the rotation at times. I think it might have been reasonable to think, hey, James Wiseman will run pick and roll with Jordan Poole on the second unit, and you know, he can dunk everything inside and get some rebounds and hopefully be athletic enough to defend around the rim. And Moses Moody, you know, perfect archetype of a 3-and-D guard. So hey, like, if we move on from Otto Porter and Gary Payton II, we wanted him back, but the price was too rich, that third year player option from Portland. Like, we drafted these guys high, we can at least count on them in a low end rotation role, and they've all just been so much worse than expected that they haven't even been able to do that. It's hard for me to criticize them to at least set their team up so that these guys were going to play some. And I think there was enough for a reasonable belief that these guys could contribute in the rotation, at least in the regular season.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, and these guys have all, I wouldn't say Wiseman necessarily, but Moody and Kuminga have really regressed this year, which I don't think it was reasonable to see coming, and maybe it won't continue. And there definitely is a lot that comes with being a young player on the Warriors. I mean, the other big problem they have is Jordan Poole sucks all of a sudden now too.
Yeah. Which
nobody saw coming.
That which he's been the best pick of this more recent era, right? And
yeah,
you know, now they have the big contract coming for him, so that becomes a little bit of a concern,
right? And maybe there is a thought, all right, well, Poole, Wiseman, Kuminga, Moody, hey, maybe we trade for a superstar, or we get someone in free agency. We're the Warriors now, we got this brand, and that's our team at, you know, 3 years from now. Also, by the way, Steph Curry is probably in the MVP conversation again this year at 34, he's gonna be 35. Like, it's just what he's doing and continuing on. Like, I think 2 years ago, to believe that Steph was still going to be at this level, that they would have won the championship again, like, they didn't even know when they drafted Kuminga and Moody whether this was going to be more than, like, you know, a six seed last year. So that I will defend them on that a little bit. I know this has been a tangent, but hopefully it's interesting to people. I mean, I guess the bigger question that I have, having been inside an organization, John, is just, is it possible to develop these players the way they need to be developed, given their system, given the pressures that they have to win now, given the chance of being punched in the face by the Hall of Fame power forward at any time?
Do you remember Clint Capella's rookie year in Houston? Because they had an awesome team. And what they did, they sent him down to the G League, and they sent him down for like half the year. And then they pulled him out late in the year and put him in the rotation as they got late in the season and into the playoffs. And he He was ready to go. Like he just delivered. And I think that's the one thing the Warriors haven't been willing to do is like take a step back with these guys. And like
Well, they're doing it now with Wiseman.
They're doing it now. Exactly. And you wonder, like, it's hard too. Like when somebody's the number two pick, you don't send them to the G League, right? But that it might've been the best thing for him at the time.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't been healthy, you know, all last year. Like they kind of needed him that first year. And it seemed like he was progressing for a time until he got hurt. And now, you know, it's just he's got to find his rhythm, quote unquote, again, although as he ever had it, it's tough to say. But anyway, back to just Golden State overall as an organization. They had a fabulous summer last year. They won the championship last year. They've still deserve credit. This is the same group that brought in all these guys to begin with. They made investments in the player development that like looked like they're really working until they just, all those guys have been terrible this year. That's kind of how much are we going to ding them for those guys sucking to start the year, basically, is the question. Because if it weren't for that, if those guys were just kind of on track, they're easily in the top five, right?
Well, except there's the year 2 years ago where the same thing happened.
Yeah.
Right? So I give them a lot of credit for being willing to spend basically whatever. They still have the highest payroll in the league. They'll have the highest payroll next year. And
also, this is part of the organization too, is like they're not among the richest ownership groups. Like they're not just paying out of pocket. Like they have built up the revenue of this franchise from a business standpoint that they're making enough money that they, and they also were willing to, you know, I forget what the exact business arrangement is, but they basically got themselves some more cash by leveraging the organization during the pandemic. So they've been willing to do that from a business standpoint to develop it and have this money to spend, where it's not just Steve Ballmer just digging into his pocket for $100 million every year like the Clippers.
Yeah, and then obviously the Kerr hire, I think it was another situation where a team made a fairly ballsy move to replace a coach who wasn't necessarily failing. Like they had gone to the second round with Mark Jackson, right? But
yeah,
they still decided to pull the trigger, and it really worked out.
Yeah, so it's hard for me. I don't know if I'm gonna have the number five. I want to kind of talk through some of these other guys, but
okay.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
There's also, there's no one who's absolutely wowing me below that top four. Is there anyone for you? Who else is in this 1B for you?
So my 1B is done. My 1B was Boston and Memphis.
Ah, okay. All right. So you had a top three.
Yeah. So now I'm into tier two.
All right. Who's at the top of that group for you?
I went with Oklahoma City, and it's tough because they're not trying to win games right now, but I do think they played their hand correctly in moving on from the somewhat overpaid and slightly disappointing Westbrook and George situation. I think Mark Daigneault was a great hire, much better coach than Billy Donovan. And I think they're set up for success. My one lingering question about them is, can they actually draft?
Yeah, we'll see. Jang is going to be a really interesting one this year. Jalen Williams, I like. He's been good so far as the number 12 overall pick. And Chet, we're not going to know. But there's, especially with Jabari not playing that well so far, I don't think that road not traveled is going to haunt them. And, you know, Jaden Ivey, they are kind of already had Shea at his position. And who else? Mathurin
would be the one
about in that range. But yeah, I mean, that's one of those ones where it was basically everyone said that top three. So I'm not going to kill you for not being willing to go outside of that top three. I do think I had Chet over Jabari. I think that's reasonable. So we'll see on that one. And, you know, Josh Giddey over Kuminga, I think that looks solid so far, not over Franz Wagner necessarily, but Giddey, I think, you know, he's got enough talent that he's saying he's a bad pick there. Like, who would have been their bad picks recently, as opposed, like, they haven't knocked any out of the park, but have there been bad ones?
Well, Poku is looking better now. There's this constant, like Jang, I think, is a perfect example of what I call Perry Jones syndrome.
Yeah,
which has been a thing with them for a while. And it's like just that they have kind of this constant urge to kind of reach on that toolsy wing and think they can teach him to shoot or develop some skills, and it never happens.
Yeah, I mean, Terrence Ferguson wasn't great.
Terrence Ferguson was a perfect example. I think of that.
I liked that pick though. He just never developed. I liked the concept of him.
I mean, that's exactly what they do. Like, the concept of the guy, but like, he was like,
well, they're like Hamidou
Diallo.
He was
one of the worst players in the Australian League. Like, how good do you think he's going to be? Josh Eustace was a ridiculous pick. We're going back a little bit.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That Baisley, I think, was another example of like that type of guy. Although he's, you know, given them at times some halfway decent minutes.
Yeah, like I don't view him as like a bad pick. You know, Trey Mann, we'll see on him in 2021. They did trade away the pick that became Alperen Şengün. He might have been nice for them. Aaron Wiggins, a nice find at number 55. He's like a solid rotation player to me.
I think he's just the guy who gets minutes on a bad team, honestly.
But they're not bad, though. He defends. He can shoot okay. He can drive. Like, what's wrong with him?
I guess. I don't know. He'll play in the league.
Right. It's at 55. Like, that's a good pick.
Okay.
Like, I think he's like a low-end rotation player. Like, he doesn't have any, like, major weaknesses. I think he defends pretty well. He plays hard. He's athletic. So anyway, I think like, yeah, that they haven't knocked anything out of the park. They also, if they had just had better luck in 2021, we would be thinking of them differently. And they still have a bunch of picks going forward. Obviously, the Paul George trade was brilliant to get Shea and all those picks going forward, and Gallo as well. The Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook trade was one of the absolute fleecings. They haven't even started to get those picks yet. That's going to complicate things for Houston, who we'll talk about maybe in the next episode, I'm guessing. Could be an episode two team, but possibly we're going at a slow pace. We could have some episodes three
episode teams four that, team maybe.
As well. You know, they do pretty well on the medical side. It seems like there is I think a little bit of a difference in their philosophy since Troy Weaver left, and that might actually be for the better. They're not just going with the absolute toolsiest wing players who will never ever be able to shoot. This hiring of Chip Engelin is an interesting one as well, that hopefully is something that can improve some of the shooting from these guys. Maybe they're, you know, Giddey, Poku, some of these guys, that's going to determine a lot for them. But I mean, like you said, one of the biggest things is the organizational vision to just make these moves when it was difficult to trade favorite son Russell Westbrook. And even though he wanted to go, that's hard to do. And I give them credit, honestly, John, for taking their asses off down the end of the last 2 years, when it turned out they were actually better than they thought they would be, because Daigneault's a good coach and some of these players worked out. You know, I'm not in love with, like, you know, your Jalen Williams, your Jeremiah Robinson Earls necessarily, but that's a small blemish. Your teams are always going to have misses. So I think, and then they've been willing to spend when they've been good as well, which is another important aspect of this team. So I think I feel pretty comfortable with them in this range. I don't know if I'll have them exactly at five, but they're probably right there.
Okay. Who's your next team?
Oof.
It gets tough here, right? Again,
there's so few teams to really be like blown away by at this point, with just how much turnover there's been. I think Philly's got to be in this list. I just really respect Daryl and his resume. And I thought they had a really nice offseason as well. I thought they did pretty well in the Harden trade. Ben Simmons is playing a little better, but that was a negative value of contract that they were able to get positive value for. And I think Daryl just has a good understanding of what wins games and what types of players can get you there. And I think he does a good job with transactions. He's respected throughout the league. You know, ownership's a little weird, but they seem to have given Daryl his autonomy. They're willing to spend at least some. I don't know if they're willing to go like really deep into the tax. So they're very leveraged in terms of draft picks right now. Like, they haven't hit on these end of roster guys yet in Philly the way they did in Houston at times.
Yeah.
But I still, I mean, you know, Daryl Morey is it's tough to put him below here. I mean, I think he's a top five.
Yeah. So I had Philadelphia seventh. So yeah. They were my next team as well. I think, the Maxey pick was outstanding. I think the Melton trade was really good value for them.
I shouldn't say that. The Maxey pick was obviously a massive steal at 21.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, they did actually, the only one that I really haven't loved is Jaden Springer. So Maxey was an amazing pick.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike Muscala.
Exactly. So, we'll see what happens with Harden's next contract and how much wink wink was involved in that. But I think they're probably about as well set up as they could be for a team that's as leveraged as they are and is in clear win now mode. When you look at Harden's age and Embiid's lower extremities, I mean, that's just where they have to be. Probably overpaid on PJ Tucker, especially in terms of the years, but that was the piece that fit. So it was one of those times where maybe overpaying makes sense. And I guess the next hurdle for these guys is going to see what they can do at the trade deadline. Can they somehow turn Tybal and Korkmaz in a, second round pick
Tobias or something? Tobias Harris, too. Tobias Harris is the other piece that's just has never really fit there. And he's an okay player, but he's overpaid. And you would hope to just get a few more reinforcements who have got a little more versatility than him. All right, let's do two more teams here. That'll get us to 10.
Okay. Let's see. So my next team after Philly was actually Golden State. So I had 5 Memphis, 6 OKC, 7 Philly, 8 Golden State. Who did you have at 9? Because things got murky for me at this point.
Yeah, so Memphis was 9 for me. And I my tier conveniently ended at 10 as well. I have 2 Northwest Division teams to go, and one of those is the Utah Jazz.
Okay, I had Utah at 10. I was reluctant to put them higher just because the track record was not as long.
Well, Danny Ainge's track record.
Danny Ainge obviously has been but he's working with a different owner. He's in a different situation, so you know.
I like the owner though. I've actually been very impressed by him so far.
I was nervous at first because I thought the extensions on Gobert and Mitchell were a little too fanboy, but they were able to move them for value. I mean, incredibly ballsy.
Fortunately, Tim Connelly and Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez were among those fanboys, so it worked out.
Yeah, no harm, no foul, right? And they've put together a nice team in what was supposed to be a rebuilding year. This actually could make things more complicated for them.
Yeah.
And that's one of the dangers. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle this next year and in the years.
They did too good of a job on these trades.
Exactly. But, I mean, you look at what they got here in terms of 3 firsts from Cleveland, 4 firsts from Minnesota, 3 swaps from those 2 teams, a first from Philly for Royce O'Neal, right?
Yeah. It was Brooklyn, but yeah, it's the worst of, what is it, Brooklyn, Philly, and Houston?
Yeah, so it's going to end up being Philly's pick, probably.
Yeah.
We'll see. That is just tremendous work there. We'll see how that sexy
Lowry
Markkanen
is
going to
probably make the All-Star team this year.
Yeah,
right?
Markkanen was a great pickup.
That was great identification, yeah.
Trading Beverly for Horton Tucker, I think, was a good move. And getting Walker Kessler into that Minnesota trade, I think, is paying dividends too.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, those 2 trades were really good. We didn't think the Cleveland one was as good at the time because I think people were just viewing Markkanen as just salary filler throw-in.
Yeah.
But because at the time I was like, if I were them, would I have rather had this or a Knicks package with, Quentin Grimes? And they weren't willing to go 3 unprotected picks. You don't know what the picks were. But clearly you would think Knicks picks would have more upside than Cavs picks going forward, given the talent the Cavs already had in the roster. But now that you've got an all-star player in Lauri Markkanen, there wasn't much that, I don't think Lauri Markkanen is going to be someone I'm thinking of as like a top 25 player in the NBA going forward. But I think he got a decent chance to make the All-Star team this year. But the other thing, too, that I think the Danny Ainge hire, yes, he's buddies with Ryan Smith. But Ryan Smith, you noted he came in, all right, is he a fanboy? Well, they were maybe ready to win a championship. We thought they were the best regular season team 2 years ago. Then they had their playoff foibles. It didn't work out. And they were willing to pivot. They didn't throw good money after bad. When they had a good team, they were willing to spend into the tax. Not crazy, but as much as you could hope for in a market like that. Like, they're probably a at the point where they're losing a little bit of money, I would guess, particularly because they didn't get deep into the playoffs. And then to just say, hey, no, we're actually going to make the move, the Danny Ainge hire. It certainly wasn't a perfect executive in Boston, but, you know, one of the best trading records you're ever going to see from any executive in any sport. And he proved that again this year. So, and he's still part of this group going forward. So yeah, they do have challenges still, but I think we've seen them in some different modes. And, you know, Justin Zanuck is a good experienced executive below Ainge.
Absolutely.
Doing some of the day-to-day stuff. You know, I think they've always had like a great reputation in the community, unlike a few of these teams. So yeah, I mean, this is a rock solid organization.
Yep.
Yeah. So I had them at 8. Okay. And then my last team in the top 10. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give yours or should I give mine?
No, you give me yours because I think you might have convinced me to make a couple moves on my board.
Okay. Okay. The Denver Nuggets are going to close out my top 10 and tier 2.
I think I can buy that. When I originally made this, I had them a little lower, but I think maybe I should have them at 10. Tim Connolly's gone, but there's organizational continuity with Calvin Booth. And I think the kind of the decision-making, the processes there haven't really changed. The one obvious glaring negative is they just will not spend even into the tax historically. Now they're in the tax this year, but not that far into it. And they're kind of burning through Nikola Jokic's prime, unfortunately, while this happens. So that would probably be the big negative. They've drafted well. They've tended to use their free agent money pretty wisely, although they've struggled at times to build out a bench, although they're usually doing it with like minimum guys. So it's, you know, it can be a little challenging with that. But, you know, you look at the Highland pick. I mean, that's a guy in the 20s who's in his second year and is contributing already. The Porter pick, obviously. I mean, this is a continuation of the same front office. So I kind of still give him credit for that. The Jokic pick, obviously. So overall, I'd say this is a good group.
Yeah, the Bruce Brown signing was good. I think the concept of what they did this offseason was good. And they're willing to spend some. They're $11 million into the tax right now. We'll see where they end the year. But it seems unlikely that they'll get out entirely. If you, I mean, let me ask you this, John. Let's throw out the spending component. Let's say you just they were willing to spend the way, say, the Milwaukee Bucks were spending in a what's frankly actually a smaller market. Denver is viewed as a small market in NBA terms, and they've had a bunch of issues that have made it so they're not as high a revenue as some other places. But Denver's actually like a totally large size city by NBA standards, or at least medium size city. Throw out the spending component. Everything other than that, like they're pretty clearly, if not top five, knocking on the door there, right?
Yeah, I mean, they do a good job of player development. They did a good job hiring Michael Malone, and they've stood by him. They have a partner agreement now in the G League. They still don't have their own G League team. Again, this is another like area of like, would you please spend some money? In terms of facilities, they're right down there at the bottom of the league. So yeah. Again, this is another another area. It's a tough thing to separate out, and you wonder like, well, if they did spend that much money, we'd be talking about them, you know, we'd be talking about them like Golden State because they would have won a championship or two. Like,
I don't know about that, particularly with the injuries. I don't think there's any way they could have done it the last couple of years. But yeah, I mean, they've traded away now a couple of first round picks to save money, and they let a guy that we thought was a really good executive, Tim Connolly, go over money as well. And especially when you consider how good of a drafting team this is, what could those picks have gotten them? You know, like they had to get off of Kenneth Faried back in the day, and you know, then the JaMychal Green trade, like, yeah, they in theory got a pick back, but it was a lot worse and it's way further out.
Yeah.
Or they had to give up a pick that will, and they ended up getting 30 back, I think, from Oklahoma City, but they gave up like a top five protected pick in 2027. So that's almost certainly going to be a worse pick.
Yes.
Or a better pick than what they gave up for the number 30 pick. The best they can do is tie on that one. So that's the only thing that's kind of disheartening. It is a really good organization. Other than that, I also might put a little something into their whole dispute involving the Altitude Network and just not being able to be on TV for their fans. The fact that they haven't been able to resolve that for what's that going on 3 years now? Like, that's pretty sad. I don't know how much you put on that, but there's a cheapness there with the Kroenkes, and it's unfortunate, but that still matters. And I think, you know, these guys are always going to win consistently. They've got Jokic. They found Jokic. They deserve a lot of credit for that. They've managed to bring in contributors as well with not a ton of assets, but it does seem like there's just this cap on how how good of an organization they can be due to the spending aspect.
I think that's fair.
All right. Well, this was fun. We'll see what happens next week, whether we get through day two or we go into a day three or not. But it's just a good chance to talk about these teams, refresh our memories on everything that's happened with them. And I think we'll probably get some pretty controversial ones here in this 11 to 20 range.
This next batch is going to get real interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I think people really only tune in for the worst tier.
They just want to hear 29 and 30, right?
Yeah. Nobody wants to hear success.
I got a lot of crossouts on my 11 through 20 here. Like I changed my mind a lot, you know?
Yeah. Me too. All right. Well, this will be fun. And a reminder, of course, Seth Partnow now has joined Dunked On Prime. If you're listening on the public feed, please. Yeah, Seth, if you don't know him, was kind of similar story to mine. He was a lawyer, professional poker player, and then was self-taught with NBA analytics and knows how to do basically everything that there is to do with that. Was hired by the Milwaukee Bucks for 3 years, their director of analytics, and now is actually going to be contributing to Dunked On, doing statistical support for me and Danny's work with a lot of his proprietary stats, but also then it's going to be writing for us a couple of times per week on our newsletter, which of course is part of Dunked On Prime. Danny and I also just did a mailbag on our Discord, which is a great basketball community to discuss stuff. All your crazy trade ideas, feel free to bring them there and discuss with fellow basketball nerds. And of course, you'll get every episode of Hollinger and Duncan on Dunked On Prime as well. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
All right, I teased it yesterday. We are incredibly excited to be adding another awesome creator to the Dunked On universe. Seth Partnow, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. I enjoyed the pause for effect there.
Yeah, sadly, it'll probably get edited out when I take out the sounds.
So I just sound silly. Great.
And people like to know the behind-the-scenes process, and that's what I tell myself when I forget to make an edit and people see it. So that's okay. People are not here for the incredible editing. They are here for awesome basketball talk and awesome basketball stats now that you will not be able to get anywhere else. So that's a big part of what Seth is going to be doing for us. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, you're going to be doing some writing for us, which is probably what I am most excited about.
I would say it's some nuggets for you. I've found over the years since I left the Bucks front office that there's been a lot of times when I'm just looking at something, messing around, and come up with an interesting bit of statistical analysis that isn't really worth a whole article unto itself. And I've kind of in the past just sort of shot those out on Twitter, and that's fine. But it's easy for those just to get lost. Even when I go back and try to find something I've done previously for, I like the visualization or I like the stat I did there. It's very difficult to find. And for people who are interested, which I think your audience very much is, making sure you just don't miss it. You get the little bite-sized bits, a couple times a week. Hopefully that's the kind of thing that increases understanding and enjoyment.
Yeah, Seth, of course, you still have your full-time job, so that's a slight limiting factor. So it's not going to be a crazy amount of stuff, but we're proud to have you associated with us in whatever capacity that you want to give us. And so these will be part of Dan's Daily Dunks. You're always going to have something on Mondays, right? And then yep, a couple times a week, yep, one or two times a week outside of that.
Yeah, something to hopefully accompany the 15 and 60s. I think you and Danny do a good job of contextualizing with some stats as you're kind of looking over things, and I think giving the listeners a bit more of an insight into the kinds of things that you know teams and analysts within teams look at to make those evaluations themselves, I think would be very useful.
Yeah, so we're going to hopefully get a lot of feedback from y'all as well in the Discord. To email us at dunkedonprime@gmail.com. It's all stuff that you would like to see from Seth. And another great aspect of what he's doing is that Danny and I are now going to have access to a bunch of his stats that use the tracking data. What's some of the unique stuff that you're going to be giving us on a weekly and sometimes daily basis to help our coverage?
You can build a pretty robust kind of simple shot quality model based off of the stuff that's getting released by NBA.com. Obviously, rim protection is a big and paint defense is always a big topic. Miles Turner is having a pretty monster rim protection season so far.
Yes, yes.
Brooke Lopez is also having his usual massive impact in that area. Some stats on you know breaking down usage a little bit more. I've described it as either true usage or total usage in the past, and just keeping updated on that so we can see that yes, in fact, Luka Doncic has a historically high offensive burden this year. And
can you elaborate just a little bit on what total usage is? Because I found that to be the best measure that I've seen to really break down what a guy's offensive load is.
Well, there's two parts to it, really. I actually originally created it trying to find a better way to contextualize turnovers. Turnover percentage, as presented on any stat site, is playmaking for teammates can only hurt you in turnover percentage, because if the pass is completed, it's a nothing, and if it's a turnover, it's a negative.
Right, so it's only compared to shots.
Yes,
it's either shots or turnovers. There's no assist component.
Yes. So with the tracking data, we get not just assists where the player happens to make a shot, but potential assists where the ball handler passes to a player who shoots in, as defined in the tracking data, in under 2 seconds and under two dribbles, which is a definition that aligns pretty well with how assists are actually given. There are some assists that are given that don't meet that criteria, and some makes that meet that criteria that aren't given. but it's a good enough estimate, and so that allows us to do playmaking usage on the same scale as scoring usage. Okay, 25% of our team's chances, I attempt to shoot the ball. The league leaders in playmaking usage, as I call it, will be in the low to mid 20s usually. So on about 1 in 5 offensive chances, they'll be creating or at least passing to a shooter. And then you combine those and you compare the two of those to turnovers, and gets you a much better, much truer sense of how much a player is turning the ball over relative to how much they're actually doing on offense. So a player who is for example, Draymond Green won't get penalized by having a massive turnover rate, a turnover percentage in traditional terms, because he never shoots. But since he does a lot of playmaking, it balances that out a little bit.
Yeah, and I always like to look too before I have access to the stat, which now I will, so I won't have to do this shorthand of just, hey, Trae Young, you had 5 turnovers tonight. You have 5 turnovers every game. Oh, but the Hawks actually turned the ball over the least of any team. Why is that? Like, you think Trae Young, oh, he had 5 turnovers, he had a bad game, he's throwing the ball over the gym. But if he's the only person on the entire team that turns it over because he makes every play, then your overall team turnover rate is low. And so that metric captures it. So that's just a small example. Let's do a couple more. We probably have too many to even get into here that you're going to do. And you've probably got like 10 or 15 things that you're going to be providing us, at least so far, that are not available publicly and that are going to really increase our understanding. But a couple other ones that we can highlight here.
The one that I think is going to be going up pretty regularly is we hear a lot about clutch play and how teams do in clutch games. And that is important to team's record, but it's also important to recognize that the definition of clutch that we tend to use within 5 minutes, 5 minutes or less, there's a massive difference between being down five on the road with 5 minutes left and being up five at home with 5 minutes left in terms of, it's probably, you know, the difference between, I don't have it in front of me, but like 15% and 85% win probability or something like that. So just knowing how teams are entering clutch play can give some context to, how well they're actually performing. If teams are just making late comebacks and losing games that they didn't really have that much chance of winning, that's useful to know versus a team like, I don't know, last year's Celtics that pretty routinely punted away games from high win probability positions. And I say the Celtics because in the tracking data era, they appear to be among teams that were not blatantly tanking by some margin the worst clutch team relative to their sort of overall level of play.
Yeah, that's fascinating, and I'm looking forward to getting into some more stuff on that. In fact, we'll talk about that in a second. Don't worry, we're not just going to make this a preview. We're also going to talk a little basketball today. All right, give me one more that we can look forward to here.
Another thing that I like to look at is we hear a lot about three-point percentage. Well, knowing more with the tracking data, we can start to break threes down and actually know a little bit about whether the threes a team is giving up is open, are open, whether they're contested, whether players that are taking the threes are good or bad shooters, whether the threes they are getting are by good or bad shooters. I have a number of different ways to look at that. For example, I have an average shooter quality metric, which basically looking at the career percentages on uncontested threes that a player has taken gives you a decent idea of how good a shooter he is. A lot of players, even that don't have awesome three-point percentages because they're taking a lot of contested ones. Well, Michael Porter Jr., I think, might be the only player with significant attempts in the database. I have to look and see what Seth Curry has done in his last couple of games, who's made over half of his uncontested threes. So obviously that means leaving him open is very bad. and conversely, him getting shots means that those looks are higher value for the Nuggets than just random 3-point attempt. And so looking at, you know, weighting those by attempts to see, actually, no, the Lakers can't shoot because their players who are taking their shots have not been good shooters over the course of their career. That one's fairly obvious, but I think there's a lot of ways to dig into that on both a, you know, season segment and game by game basis, especially in the playoffs. I think there's kind of a myth that teams, quote, leave the right guys open. That's not really a thing in the regular season. I think it probably is a little bit more within a playoff series when you can, you know, scheme for preferred actions and really dial in on which players you're not helping off of and which players you're helping off freely.
No, all that's really exciting too. I talk a lot about jump shooters not all being made equal, not all three-pointers are made equal. And you say, oh, this guy's a good shooter. Okay, what do you mean by that? Do you mean that, all right, we get this guy wide open with his feet set, he's going to hit 40%? Do we mean that he's got a lot of versatility to his jumper? You know, what's he hitting on contested versus uncontested shots? And now having a way to quantify that is really exciting for me as well. So let's talk a little basketball here. Yeah. You've been putting all this stuff together over the last couple of days. What are some things that have just stood out to you about our early season league here?
The Kings are good, or at least they certainly appear to be. I mean, they're
as like the beam. Sorry, I say that in a Chicago accent just because I don't know. I don't know what a Sacramento accent is. Sacramento, I think, is pretty much accentless. If anyone from Sacramento wants to tell me differently, living in the Bay, I've never experienced a Sacramento accent. There isn't really a Bay accent either, come to think of it. But yeah, so I'll just do the Sacramento Kings Chicago Bears super fan when I say light the beam from now on, and
sure,
until someone wants to disabuse me of it.
So obviously they are, as of this morning, their win and the Celtics loss last night, they're the number one offense in the league. I think they've actually been a little, their defense is in the 20s somewhere. I think they've been a little unlucky. Their shot profile is actually pretty decent. They allow by some margin, the last I looked, the fewest on our per 100 basis, the fewest uncontested threes in the league. They've been really unlucky luck in terms of shot making is always a fraught term because the ball, yeah, their skill to the ball going in or not. But still,
they've also played the Warriors three times, yeah, in their 17 games. Yeah,
so they're
15 games, three, yeah, times in 15 games. So 20% of their sample is made up of Warriors. That's a good reason to expect your opponent's shooting to regress.
Yeah, they're in the mid 40s in terms of opponents hitting uncontested threes. Now, with league average is around 38%. Now, we're getting up close to, you know, a couple points a game there, which is might not sound like much, but that's, you know, that over the course of a season, like 2 points is about 5 wins. 2 points per game is about 5 wins. So that normalizing probably brings their defense closer to, I would say probably closer to average, maybe slightly below instead of, you know, bottom five-ish.
Well, yeah, if they can continue to do what they're doing offensively and even be competent on defense, the drought may end. Although, I mean, can I really say I'm rooting for that? I've really been enjoying the jokes. All good things must come to an end, though, I suppose. And it's also actually, being on the West Coast, the Kings are often one of the last games that I'm watching, so it's good to see them actually be competent. The crowd has been fantastic there as well. What else you got?
The Bulls are 0-7 in the clutch this year, which is funny, because after, you know, DeMar DeRozan had one of the really great clutch seasons last year. If you look at our, my friend Mike Bowie of Inpredictable has a win probability added metric, which basically looks at, you know, okay, this shot goes in, you've added, you know, say you're down two at the buzzer and you take a three, that shot goes in, is it adds like 70% win probability, probably more than that actually, but still, looking at that over the last couple seasons, DeRozan last year had one of the most impactful of the last two decades, I want to say. I think Dame 2 years ago and Westbrook during his MVP season were kind of the two comparable ones I found. But that's all of which is to say that those things tend to be fleeting, although Dame has a long track record of doing it. and so it's kind of flipped around this year, and they're 0-7 in the clutch, and they're probably, even accounting for how they've gotten to the clutch, they probably should have two or three more wins. Now, there's still, I think there's still some structural issues there, but I wonder how different people feel about them if they're, you know, if they're 8-9 or 9-8 rather than 7-10, and just how those little things kind of make a difference.
No, that's really fascinating. And by the way, another nugget that I noted, this is not from you, is the Phoenix Suns had one of the great clutch seasons last year. They're 1-4 in clutch games so far. So yeah, it really is. Yeah, we'll get into it a lot because you're compiling this data, I'm sure, of just how sustainable clutch play is from year to year. Generally, it seems like it hasn't been. Maybe there are some exceptions in either direction. You know, you could be a bad clutch team from year to year as well, particularly if you have certain styles of plays and certain players who are consistent from year to year. That could be a little bit of a tease for what you're doing going forward. Another thing I've been really interested in one of the numbers that you're creating for us is contested finishing percentage, which I think is really interesting, right? All right, if you get out on the fast break and you just get a wide open dunk, you know, that we're not interested in that really. Like, that's, it's important to know that you're doing that, but that doesn't really get into like how good of a finisher are you that you could do a windmill on a fast break. So that's another stat that you really put out there that I'm excited to dive into. And so that'll be the field goal percentage on shots from 10 feet or less with the closest defender within 4 feet. So that's room attempts, maybe a little bit of floater range as well, which will be pretty interesting. So I'm excited to dive into that one. I'm sure we'll use a lot of that in the 15 and 60 as well. All right, give me one more nugget here on what's going on.
One of the things that you've asked about is the rim protection, and I was messing around with it, and for all the concern about the kind of indifferent offensive start to the season and kind of the overall team wobbliness of the Timberwolves, one thing that Jaden McDaniels is doing is providing a lot of value as a sort of a wing, like help, weak side helper. I was going through those numbers today, and he's actually been you know, relative to certain to forwards, and he's obviously playing forward, not center, on the Timberwolves, given who they have in the middle. He's provided a lot of value there. So that's that one of their theories of that starting lineup is bearing out, even if many of the others aren't so far.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And, you know, I wonder what they're going to do with that team and how it's all fitting together. But that's, I mean, I think he kind of developed that skill some, because, you know, if you saw him as a prospect, you weren't exactly impressed by, you know, his amazing help defense. But he kind of developed that last year when they're playing this scheme where Karl Anthony Towns is way out on the floor in pick and roll defense. And so he had to be a lot of times in a lot of their lineups a secondary rim protector. So knowing that he has that skill. So, and again, since you've worked with the team, these are really interesting stats to know, because when you're building your lineup, right, to know, all right, Jaden McDaniels, maybe he could do more as a rim protector. Maybe we can put him in that role schematically. The times that he's been there, that's been something that we have been able to do. So that's another thing that's really exciting about what you're doing, is, you know, you've been in the trenches trying to come up with stuff, make recommendations. You know, one of the things that we want you to do even is kind of just do brief updates on some teams, like pretend like you're their analytics guy sending a report to the GM on, hey, here's how we're doing, here's what's going to sustain, here's what's not going to sustain. So that's something you're going to be doing on occasion as well. So we're incredibly excited to have you, Seth. This has been fantastic. And oh, by the way, Chris Paul is shooting 28% at the rim on contested finishes.
It's not great. So before leaving, it is a combination that stat is a little bit limited by what data is public, but I think it sort of captures both not finishing at the rim well and not getting to the rim in the first place, especially right, penetrating right. Guards who end up shooting a lot of floaters. I think that's frankly a limitation of some players if they can't get to the rim anymore. I think that's a useful thing to look at.
Yeah. Killian Hayes, 18 games, 22.9%.
It's not good.
Contested finishing at the rim. Yeah, some of these low ones are really interesting. Some of the high ones are pretty interesting, too. We'll, of course, get into these a lot more. All right, man, this is really fun. We're looking forward to doing stuff. Please jump in the Discord, send some emails as well. Dunkedonprime@gmail.com. Stuff you'd like to see from Seth, acknowledging that his time is limited because he does also have a full-time job as well. But we're really proud to have you on, my friend, and we're looking forward to doing some really interesting work.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to get the band back together a little bit.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.